Colonel Mike Derrick is a Democratic candidate for New York's 21st District. Let me ask you this. You're going to be running against two other people, Matt Funicello from the Green Party and Elise Stefanik, who is the congresswoman now. Where is Ms. Stefanik vulnerable?
She's vulnerable in her voting record. She's voted against the interests of the people who live in this district. And, you know, we'll be able to call that out consistently and show that her priorities are with her party and with those who support her, her donors. They're far more in those two camps than they are with the interests and the future of the people of the North Country.
What do you think about Hillary Clinton? I mean, you're going to be running on the same ticket with her. Presumably she will help you because we know that in presidential years, Democrats tend to do a little bit better. But she's been challenged on a number of things, talking to bankers, taking their money, you know, other things like that. Do you have to run away from her, or do you just have to sort of embrace her, or do you have to just ignore her?
Like, you know, a lot of primary processes, this has been a rough and tumble one, certainly on the Democratic side. And we had two strong candidates. And it's interesting for me to watch as someone
who's... Did you vote for Bernie?
I voted for Bernie.
Me too.
And so, you know, it's been interesting to watch the process unfold. And I think this has been a very healthy and good process for the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton, I will support her. Among the choices we are offered for president, she is clearly the choice we must make for the benefit of this country. Because Donald Trump is a place, in my opinion, where we can't go.
Okay, we can't go there, but what if we have to go there? What if he wins?
I hate to think about that, but if he wins, you know, we are then going to need a Congress, a Senate, and a House which can balance what I think will be a very negative effect that we'll see coming out of the executive branch.
Interesting. So do you, as a former colonel, have any thoughts, or colonel retired, I should say, have any thoughts about Donald Trump and what he's been saying about he has really no problems with enhanced interrogation, meaning waterboarding?
Yeah, well, let me just, you asked what do I think of Donald Trump. I mean, I've spent a life in leadership, leading myself, selecting, training, choosing young leaders. When you look for a leader, you look for someone who has character and you look for competence. And I think Donald Trump falls short on both counts. He does not have the character. He does not have the competence to be president. And so you asked about enhanced interrogation. I mean, we've been through this very, very painful chapter in government already. It was a mistake the first time. It would be a significant mistake to make it again. And it would put our uniformed services and other government employees in an intractable position. That's the position.
What? Yeah, because
meaning that you're getting an order which is unlawful, and you know that. Then you know that's what we hope will never happen. We count on our civilian leadership to issue lawful orders, and if that and that has happened. I mean, there perhaps are isolated examples where that hasn't happened in American history, but by and large, our civilian leadership has issued lawful orders, and this would be, under our current rules, an illegal order. That puts those who serve in government or in the military in a tremendously difficult position, and they have to go with the law in that
case. Is waterboarding torture?
I believe it is.
How do we?
I've been through training. Training where
you had to do it.
Well, I went through a school called Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape, 3-week course, which is designed to take people through the process of what do you do if you are captured and escape, or what do you do if you're shot down in enemy territory. So you survive, you know, you resist, you escape, and we went through phases in each of those. So
did
I
you
have
to do it yourself?
I have been tortured. Yes, I have been tortured under controlled conditions.
So
I might add.
So what's it like? They put you.
So for me personally, the big one was they forced me into a wooden box, and then they closed one side of it with clasps, and I was left in that box for a matter of 8 hours.
No kidding.
And, you know, it's nothing that's going to kill you, But, you know, for a guy who's 6 feet tall, it suddenly becomes really, really uncomfortable after a very short period of time. And, you know, they keep knocking on the box and saying, hey, are you ready to talk now? Are you ready to talk now? And so they force you through that decision process within your own mind. You know, what is your breaking point? And in my case, that's the tool they used. Not a lot of fun. But, you know, it teaches you a lot about yourself. I mean, anything that's hard will help you define your limits. And hopefully you know what your limits are, and then you learn how to push through those limits. And you become better, faster, stronger, smarter. And, you know, so that school did it for me. Plus, they starved me to death, which was, you know, which was not a lot of fun.
Well, I have you on this. We've been reading a great deal about PTSD and the veterans who have had such a tough time when they've come back. What should this country be doing to make it better?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this country, if it has the political will to send a service member into conflict and that service member then comes home damaged or diminished in some way, we as a government, we as a people have a moral obligation to care for that soldier, to care for that Marine, that airman, that sailor.
And we're not doing it now?
And we're not doing it now. And, you know, you look at how we're allocating money for the Veterans Administration. Furthermore, I think it is a government responsibility. And one of the things that Elise Stefanik has floated in the past is privatization of the Veterans Administration. That would be an egregious mistake. That would just be, it is, again, a failure of our... If we have the will to send a soldier to war, we must have the will as a government to care for that soldier when they come back. So there's a lot to do there. That is my community. I am a veteran myself.
Of course.
When people talk about PTSD, they talk about people whose lives have been altered by amputations or by serious wounds, loss of limb, loss of eyesight. I mean, these are people I know. And they're the lucky ones, because there's many I know who didn't come back.
Didn't even get here.
That's right.
Do we take the right people to be in the Army? I know it's a very tough question. My brother served at Fort Monmouth, where he was captain and in charge of the mental health clinic. And he would tell me that there were promises made about electronic training, things like that, that were given to servicemen who couldn't possibly take, they'd give them the test and they're off to Vietnam in those days. Is the Army up and up?
The Army is a remarkable institution in that it provides upward social mobility for people in our country. So with an all-volunteer force, you know, and this is a story from the North Country. We have the highest number of veterans in the North Country, in that district in New York State, because more people enlist in the Army and the other services up there, because there's often not much economic opportunity.
Yeah.
So it allows people to go off and have a job where they gain skills and they gain experience. And in many cases, they resign from the Army after their term of service and they come home. In some cases, they stay in and then they retire. And so it is a remarkable institution. And it's interesting to watch how the Army has led in many different instances, such as, you know, our more recent normalization of life for the gay community. I mean, the Army did that as a government institution early. And I remember the day in 2000, I believe it was 2012, October 1st, 2012. And it was interesting because we trained and talked about it for months, and then it happened, and it was a non-event. The people who we knew were gay before were still that way, and they were equally effective before and after. And it didn't change the fabric of at least the piece of the Army I was in at the time.
It's always great to talk to people who make you think. And Colonel Mike Derrick, retired, has been with us today. He's running for Congress, and he's a Democratic candidate in New York's 21st District. Colonel, if I may call you that, when we come back the next time, we'll continue with our discussion.